from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Oh, Armstrong lines one into the right field corner. That ball's going to be in there for a base hit. Up against the wall. Horner racing around third. He's going to try to score. Armstrong to third with a triple. Pete Crow Armstrong, a three-base hit. Cubs lead 3-1.
Part of a good-looking offensive showing, at least early, for the Chicago Cubs yesterday. Pete Crow Armstrong with the triple to drive in Nico Horner, and then a really nice bunt by Miguel Amaya with PCA at third. And, the Cardinals knew they had no shot to get a PCA there. And Pete Crow Armstrong's offense is something that bears a little discussion. And you'll hear Dustin Kelly, the Cubs hitting coach, talking about that in just a little bit. It's Hit and Run with me, Matt Spiegel. Phone lines are wide open now for you at 312-644-6767. We're going to play this stuff from Dustin Kelly, and you can talk Cubs offense or anything else you like regarding them. And after that, I'm going to share with you some of the Bob Nightingale notes about the trade deadline and the White Sox, because he confirmed something that was reported just the other day or shared on a podcast by our friend Dan Hayes in Minnesota. Bob Nightingale confirms it. And if it's maddening to you, it ought to be. So if you're not mad as a White Sox fan, maybe this will help. This will help get you that little extra bit of anger. We'll share that with you in a little bit. But first, here's Dustin Kelly, who spoke to reporters yesterday in the dugout over at Wrigley Field. I was there and I'm listening and got on a question, a follow-up on something that our colleague Bruce Levine from Inside the Clubhouse had asked about. So you'll hear that as part of this conversation. And we started by asking about Isaac Paredes, I should say, who has been impressive at the plate. Even if the results haven't been there, his process has been very obvious and very, very impressive. Here's Dustin Kelly on Paredes and two-strike approaches and more.
We talked about Paredes' pull-side power, but just his overall offensive profile, where it's strikeout rate's low, he's got high contact ability, and he's got the power, the ability to situationally go the other way. When you got him, what were you looking forward to, how much were you looking forward to getting that type of profile in your hands to kind of see what you could do?
Yeah, it's a unique one, right? I mean, you don't see as many guys pull the ball that much in the air. I think he's only on the ground like 29% ground ball rate. The punch is like 15 and the walk is pretty similar. So we're kind of intrigued, right, of like, how does this guy do this at this high of a level? And you think it's kind of one-dimensional, but then you watch his at-bats. I mean, that 12-13 pitch at bat yesterday, and he fought off 9 in a row that he fouled off. Like, you see the bat to ball skills, but then you also see like there's an attack that he has, and he has a presence in the box that, like, if you make a mistake, he's going to hit it hard to the pull side. So I mean, I'm just excited to just watch him just be him.
In the teaching process, can you teach a 2-strike approach to a hitter these days? Are they receptive to it? Do you worry about the fact that we just want them to concentrate on what they do well rather than something new? How difficult is this?
There's a balance to it. I think, like, we talk a lot about, like, what's the scoreboard telling us, right? And, like, how are we playing to the game? And, like, if we really need a ball put in play with 2 strikes, you're going to see guys cut down their swings. And Paredes is one of them. We noticed that, like, with 2 strikes, he cuts down the late kick. It's a little bit more of a toe tap. And he gets down earlier, and he's using like a little bit more of the field. So our guys do have 2-strike approaches. They know when there's 2 strikes. They understand that there's a chance to move the ball forward. They're going to try and move the ball forward. But everybody has like their own little ways of kind of approaching a 2-strike count. And if it's early in the game, and there's 2 outs and a runner on second, like we're trying to drive that ball in the gap and score. And there's other times where we do have to move the ball forward, and we're not going to try and strike out there. So you'll see, like, if you watch our guys enough, you see minor little adjustments that everybody pretty much makes. Belly's obviously probably the most obvious of what he does, but most of our guys do have some type of mechanical move they make with 2.
Now that Paredes is here, and you've got him him and Bellinger with that kind of approach? Is there a contagious effect in terms of a willingness to try in that way?
Yeah, I think all of our guys have it. It's not like a stubbornness to not want to cut down with two strikes. I think what that does with Paredes now and Belly back in there is now you have two guys that tend to be a little bit better with two strikes, so it just lengthens that out. I don't think that it's contagious. You're not going to see guys completely flip the way that they, you know, we've had Belly for 2 years and everybody's seen his two strike, how he cuts it down. But I think it just lengthens out and it just makes it a little bit tougher for some pitchers to get through some shorter innings.
With Bellinger, can you describe what he, especially in the DH role, like he's so cerebral, but yet you don't see him that way as a player. Can you describe all the work he puts in, the communication he has with you, how aware he is of just about everything he's doing?
Yep. Probably one of the highest baseball IQ hitters that I've ever been around. I mean, he has a memory that goes back as far as he wants it to, with pitch descriptions, whether he faced this guy or not, what this guy did to him. You know, the work that he does is very intentional. He knows exactly what he's trying to do. He has his drill set. It doesn't change much, but just the way that he's able to attack a pitcher and pick up an arm slot, and you'll see him in the on-deck circle or a pitching change where he's just completely locked in and almost like in a zone that a lot of players aren't, where he's visualizing what that pitch is going to look like before the guy even comes out of the bullpen.
That's cool. That's Dustin Kelly talking about Cody Bellinger with like glowing terms, talking about his approach and also just how he thinks about it. You can go back as far as you want to in terms of remembering pitchers and how they attack him and such. Wow. That was really interesting to me. That was my follow-up in there, hopefully trying to get an answer about whether it can be contagious to see multiple guys with two-strike approaches. And Dustin Kelly wouldn't go for it. Said, no, it's not about willingness. But it's not about willingness. It's about whether they have it or not, whether they're good at it or not. And then if you have guys who are good at it, then great. But if you don't, then no. And it bums me out because I disagree. And because, look, I asked Nico last year if Bellinger's approach could be contagious, have more guys willing to have a two-strike approach, willing to go the opposite way. And Nico told me yes. But what are you going to do? We asked the hitting coach. He says no. At some point, I have to stand down and just believe him. He was talking about Pete Crow Armstrong a little bit yesterday as well, because PCA on base, it has been a different thing. Or just over the last 8 games, the batting average is over 300. The OPS is over 800. You can see the at-bats are kind of more authoritative. And he is looking to slug sometimes, and I'm among those who would like to see him be a little bit slappier up there and just kind of fight, scratch, and claw his way to get on base, since he's so damn good stealing bases. But here's Dustin Kelly talking about Pete.
When we look at Pete Crow Armstrong, his hard hit rate has kind of steadily gone up over the last couple of months. And what's gone into his mechanical changes, you mentioned, kind of, you know, from the driving from the back.
Yeah, with Pete, we have so many conversations with him just about approach and plan and pitch selection, and that's a big part of his maturity and where he's going as a big league player. We try not to talk too much mechanics, but there was a conversation that Belly was a part of that we were in Kansas City. And similar to what we talked about with Miggy, is we did a little drill. It's kind of like a hover drill where it's a little bit more of a leg kick, but he's really trying to stand his backside before he makes his forward move. And that's a drill that we've done for a while, even in January. And he was kind of doing it in the cage, and it looked pretty good. And we were taking some video on the side, and it was like, hey, let's run this out there for a game or two and see how it works. And he really stayed behind the baseball, made some really great decisions. So you're seeing a little bit more of like a knee tuck or leg kick from Pete, and the results have been really good. He hasn't, the results, you know, batting average wise haven't really shown up, but if you look at the quality of bat and what he's doing, impacting balls to the pull side, to the opposite field, it seems like that mechanical change might be one that sticks for a while.
You mentioned the mechanicals, like not trying to get too mechanical with him. He's kind of been open about like the mental side of it and how hard it is to hit at this level. How much do you work with him in terms of the mental aspect and like how hard it is to hit at the major league level?
Probably 90% of it is plan, approach, mental. Like, today's a new day. You know, that at bat's done. This is your new at bat. You have a new opportunity. And that's hard for young guys because they want to go out there and they want to perform and they want to help the team. But you just know that there's a learning curve that goes through all of these guys, and it's not linear. I think Jed says that a lot too, right? It's not going to happen at the same time for every guy. And hopefully we're starting to see that kind of like, you know, start to, with Pete, it's happened a little slower than what probably he expected or other people, but you're seeing a really good quality at bat from a young player that doesn't have a lot of big league time. And it's an important part of the season for us too. So it's been a huge, huge moment for him.
He's also mentioned, like, you know, he's kind of gotten to the mindset where, like, he just needs to get on first base. Like, he doesn't have to try and, you know, hit it in the gap or anything, because with his base running ability, he can, you know, a single can turn into a double, et cetera, et cetera. How have you seen that kind of transpire in those at bats?
I mean, he's a threat on the bases, right? And it's not, you want him up there being aggressive and looking to, you know, hit balls hard and be Pete Crow Armstrong, and not just, I don't want him just find any way to get on base. Like, I want him to have an at bat and have an approach, and if he gets a good pitch to hit, I want him swinging at it. And with those will come walks, you know, as he starts to kind of dial in his heat zone and really what he's looking for, then those walks start to come, and that's where the opportunities for the stolen bases. But he's going to get plenty of hits. He's going to hit doubles. He's going to hit some homers. But I just don't want him, like, finding any way to try and get on base. I want him to have a really good plan of attack on how he's going to get on base.
Well, that's interesting. That speaks to the changed times, folks. A guy like Pete Crow Armstrong, with that speed as a weapon and that ability to beat out ground balls, in eras past, you would be talking about him scrapping and fighting and clawing his way to get on base. And now they're talking about having a good, strong approach, and it's okay if he tries to slug, hit the ball hard, and with that will come the walks. So that's the idea. And that's Ricky Henderson, right? So the dream is that even the speedy and the scrappy can have enough pop and enough slug that they're Ricky Henderson. It's just, it's a different time, and it's a different era. I'll say this for Pete Crow Armstrong. When he gets on base and gets a chance to steal, unstoppable. Unstoppable. Dude is 21 for 21 in the bigs. He was 10 for 10 in the minors. Appreciate that from a frequent texter, Mike in LaGrange Park, who helped me with that one. 31 for 31 right now on the professional level, stolen bases without being caught. You know what's only happened 6 times in baseball that a player has gone for at least 20 steals without being caught in a big league season. Last year, Trey Turner was 30 for 30. In 2023, he was 30 for 30. 30 steals, was not caught. That's the most ever for somebody in a season without being caught. 9 more for Pete, and he'll tie that. So consider this a preemptive mention of that possibility. And when you add in his 10 for 10 at Iowa, he's already above 30 for 30. He's 31 for 31 on the year. All right, so that's Dustin Kelly, Cubs hitting coach. I mentioned I was going to bring you this, and before we go to break, I will. This from Bob Nightingale in the USA Today. This about the trade deadline from the White Sox perspective. Quote, "The White Sox were never going to trade Garrett Crochet or even Eric Fetty in the division, unless completely overwhelmed." So that is confirmation that they were never going to trade Crochet or Fetty in the division. And they didn't trade Fetty in the division. And if you didn't hear Dan Hayes on Foul Territory earlier in the week, he said that the White Sox asked for one of the top 3 prospects from the Twins, and the Twins said no. Then the Twins offered Luke Kuechel, who is their number 5 prospect, and a really interesting hitter, and the White Sox said no. And then they took what they got from the Dodgers instead for Fetty and Kopech and Pham. They took Miguel Vargas and the 2 kids. Miguel Vargas did homer on Friday. Otherwise, he's hitless as a member of the White Sox. A one-time, big-time prospect who, you know, is still absolutely may pan out, but has not done it in the big leagues, and we'll see what happens. with the White Sox. But the fact that they were afraid to trade within the division, to me, is absolutely ridiculous. Crochet's under contract for two more years. Next year, you're not going to be any good. So you're worried about that for next year? If you get a great offer within the division, trade within the division. The schedule has been largely balanced anyway. I mean, there are three wild card spots. What are you doing? What are you doing? It doesn't matter to not trade within the division. That's some old school thinking, man. So more from Nightingale. While Fetty wound up with the Cardinals, Crochet will definitely be traded this winter. That's a definitely from Bob. White Sox are expected to completely shut down Crochet at some point to help assure teams that he's healthy and will be dominant again in 2025. Chicago believes his trade value will be much higher this winter. I bet that's true. I bet that is true. And so maybe they'll do that. You'll hear from Garrett Crochet when we come back, and we'll throw open the phone lines for you right now for either Cubs or Sox talk at 312-644-6767. Dial it up and get involved on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. Eno Saris at the top of the hour. Team of the Moment later on this hour as well.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
The premier baseball show in Chicago, Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
How do you, as a team, continue to just fight through this thing?
Can't go on forever, you know. I feel like, you know, showing up to the field every day, you know, we're expecting to break the streak, and then it's just like just tough loss, you know. For the most part, I feel like we've been in most of the games that we've lost, not even just on this streak, throughout the year. And typically one play is the difference, or one inning is the difference. It's really all there is to it.
Later on today at 1:10, it'll be the White Sox and the Twins. Chris Flexen and Sean Woods Richardson are your starting pitchers. I know the White Sox haven't won a game that Flexen has started since, what is it? Is it May? It's early May. So, I mean, my goodness, this thing. So they could lose that. That'll be 20 if they lose that today. And then after that, the White Sox will go to Oakland. There we go. There we go. But you know what? Oakland's got some talent. Oakland has 19 more wins than the White Sox. They're 20 games better than the White Sox in the loss column. Brent Rooker has a lot of power. They've got some dudes who can actually play, and these games are on the road. We'll see if folks are going to stay up late and watch that and just see how high the losing streak can go. Garrett Crochet very much in the news this week all over baseball with a controversial power play, having allowed his agents to release the information that he would not go to the bullpen, nor would he pitch in October in any way unless there was a contract extension. And this absolutely torpedoed his trade value. And it hurt Chris Getz and obviously damaged what the White Sox could do. Crochet talked about it afterwards and said, I'm sure some people maybe think it was selfish, but I'm just kind of, you know, trying to. I don't want to paraphrase. That's not fair. Let me just say this. What he did has been done in the NBA for a long, long time. It's been done in the NFL for a long, long time. I understand a pitcher wanting to do it, especially if you're a guy with a history of injuries in an industry full of injuries and you believe that your routine as a starter is what is keeping you healthy and you want to remain a starter. I get it. It's a difficult place. He is a groundbreaker in this regard. Be interested to know what Steve Stone thinks of it. He was on Inside the Clubhouse with our Bruce Levine and David Hall yesterday morning.
His representation, the agent he works with, does not have the greater good of the Chicago White Sox in mind. He has the greater good of Garrett Crochet in mind because that's who he works for. And I believe that they probably felt that they want to make sure that their client is as healthy as possible. And being the first year that he's starting, I think this is a difficult situation, almost unprecedented. And I can't blame either side. I mean, the White Sox would have loved to have kept all of this in-house, the agent going to them and saying, look, here's the auspices to which we will make a trade, and we will accept the trade, and we will pitch in October. And he wanted an extension. So, I mean, you can understand both sides of the equation. It's actually a classic labor management argument, which we have in a lot of different industries, with labor always taking one side and management pretty much always taking the other side. And I think that's kind of how this played out.
That's Steve Stone. And I understand the thought process of feeling it a little bit in the middle there. I really do. Because, man, there's just no guaranteeing your future. And if you want to try as a ball player to level up in terms of power and leverage the way that others in other professional sports have, I understand. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. Phone lines are open for you. We'll start with Ron on the south side on the score. Hey, Ron, what's happening?
Hey, Steve. You know, I just want to get your opinion, which I value so much regarding baseball, and Bruce's also. I couldn't get through yesterday, but David asked him about the job Chris Getz did. And because it was generally agreed that he didn't get as much. Now, this is what Bruce said, and I will get in touch with him. You know, I know you're supposed to take the issue up with that person, but just yes. A matter of opinion. So Bruce said, you know me, I've been doing this forever.
Hey, Ron, well, hang on, just so you know, I'm gonna text this all to Bruce verbatim. So you go ahead. I'm just gonna roll tape right here and send it over to Bruce.
Yeah, I've been talking to him. But this is it real quick. He told David, well, you can't really make a determination on the trade until we see how these prospects turn out, maybe a couple years. I totally disagree with that. I mean, that's why you have prospects that are ranked. I mean, so if we don't wait a couple of years to determine how Chris Getz did, and everything that I have read from most people that cover baseball said the White Sox didn't do as well. So, but it just is your opinion of following the game and knowing the game. Do you think that you have to wait to see how these prospects, or can you at least give an opinion at this point that Chris Getz did not do as well at the trade deadline? So, okay, I'll hang up and listen, Steve.
Thanks, Ron. I mean, of course, overall, you know, how you feel about it 3-4 years from now when you see whether these guys have panned out or not, that ultimately will be how history judges it. You know, it's like when Bartolo Colon was traded for some kids that included Grady Sizemore and Cliff Lee and Brandon Phillips. All three of those prospects went to Cleveland for Bartolo Colon from Montreal. At the time, did people think it was a great trade? I don't know, but it certainly aged better. You know, like Bagwell for Wade Boggs aged better, of course. But we can also look at it in terms of prospect value, and, you know, you can do the math like that and just say, like, well, they got two of the top 50 and blah, blah, blah. And you can also listen to rival evaluators as quoted in stories. And you can believe prospect experts as quoted in stories. And that's the best we got, you know? And all of those people universally say that he didn't get enough. Say that Chris Getz did not get enough for 2 years of Eric Fetty. Okay? So 2 years of Eric Fetty, in addition to Kopech, in addition to Pham. And I know that... It's easy to overvalue Pham. Nobody wanted Tommy Pham. As well as he hits, nobody wanted him in free agency, and he eventually goes to the White Sox. And Kopech, apparently very low value, and here are the Dodgers looking like they've figured something out in just two appearances. So my opinion is that it's a little bit of both, and of course the ultimate value will be as history says. I wonder when it will be that we can hear from Bruce Levine. I don't know when we'll get a chance. Oh, now I do. Bruce is on the hotline, the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Bruce, Ron on the south side wanted to reach you. This is the best we can do.
Well, first of all, Ron on the South Side is one of the more astute baseball fans that we hear from on the Score for, what would you say, 30 years now?
Amazing.
So Ron's opinion matters, and that's why I called you to talk to you just a few minutes about the fact that when I wasn't dodging the question about whether they got enough. I think the point is what you just made, Matt, and it's a good one. You're trading players from a bad team. That's the initial premise, okay? They're the best players on a bad team. How good are they, right? And the baseball world and the other 29 teams will tell you how good they think they are. Now, it's up to you. Can you afford to sit there at the deadline and not trade Fetty, not trade Pham, not trade DeJong, not trade Michael Kopech? I guess you can on Kopech, okay, is what I would say. But the reality is you are dealing with 29 other teams and what their expectations are for their teams, how these players fit in. And, you know, Eric Fetty, with all due respect, has had a good year. But that doesn't make him anybody's 1, 2, or 3 pitcher in their rotation, okay? Not necessarily. He's okay. He's under a decent contract control for next year, making about $8 million. That's great.
Yeah, so Bruce, are you saying it was a take-what-you-can-get situation for Fetty? Because the perception...
I would say in most of these cases, yes. Okay. And then what did they do with the really good players?
Held him.
They didn't trade him.
Yeah.
They didn't trade him. They held Crochet. They held Luis Robert because he's not at his peak. And the hope for the White Sox, and I'll leave you with this, Matt. The hope for the White Sox is that Crochet gets through this season healthy. And I agree with Bob Nightingale that he'll be shut down sometime by September. And hopefully he'll be healthy going into the winter. And Robert gets through the season healthy. Then you have two big chips. And then you do, as Ron said, need to get optimum amount of players, optimum amount of talent back for those guys. But for peripheral guys, and again, with all due respect to those players, it is take what you can get at the deadline.
Bruce, thank you. Hey, while I have you, it's a delight to have our baseball insider, Bruce Levine, on Hit and Run. You mentioned Bob Nightingale in the reporting. He also today said that there was a private meeting with Grifol and Getz and Reinsdorf after the 17th straight loss, and that they decided not to fire him. Grifol could still be fired any day, is what Bob wrote. Does that dovetail with what you know from your perspective?
Yeah, anybody who's lost 19 in a row can be fired any day. Go back to 1988 in the Baltimore Orioles, started the year 21-0. Cal Ripken Sr., Cal Ripken's father, of course, was the manager for the first 9 games. He got fired after the 0-9. Frank Robinson, Hall of Fame manager and Hall of Fame player, one of the more iconic guys in the baseball history, went 0-12 before they broke that streak against the Chicago White Sox at Old Comiskey Park. Ozzie Guillen being a part of that as well. So, you know, again, anybody can get fired at any time. And if you're 0-19, nobody is going to say, gee, you didn't deserve to get fired. Okay. But in this case, if Matt Spiegel or John McGraw in his prime took over the Chicago White Sox, they're going to lose a ton of games. They're likely not going to win more than 10 games the rest of the year, no matter who's managing that team, because they have no bullpen and no offense. An offense is scoring 3 runs a game, okay, getting close to all-time low for runs scored, and a bullpen that is in shambles. Remember, they traded 2 bullpen guys, 2 starting pitchers. You're not supposed to win. It was a 100-loss team before all this mess. It's probably 120 to 125 last team.
Thank you, Bruce. Appreciate you calling in.
Take care, man.
All right, buddy.
Great show.
All right, you got it. It's Bruce Levine right there on 670 The Score. Fun fact on John McGraw, maybe the greatest manager of all time, certainly the first archetypal great manager. He and Christy Mathewson, his star pitcher, remained friends for their entire lives. after both of their careers ended. They were neighbors. They intentionally lived like down the hall from each other so they could stay close and stay pals. And I assume that's how it's going to go for Garrett Crochet and Pedro Grifol. Tony is in Elmwood Park on 670 The Score. Tony, thanks for holding. How are you?
Great. Thank you for taking my calls. I've been seizing for 18 hours. I'm telling you, I'm sorry, but Pete Crow, two words, grow up, okay? I don't want to go on this apology tour with this guy. I don't want the Cubs to have a participation trophy in his locker. First thing I would have done if I was a coach when he came in, I would have said, Pete, you call for it, you catch it. Okay, mm-hmm. That's number one. And one of the veterans should pull him aside and says, look, there's eight other guys in this team that are also very, very good. Start to think about things, son. The guys had, you know, I don't care. He's 22 years old. He's this. He's had 4 or 5 years of professional. He's been in a professional organization for 4 or 5 years. He's probably been, if anything, he's been overcoached. Okay, so I'll cut him. This is it. Right, as I said, right now, grow up. Let's see what happens going forward. Now, if you get one more thing,
yes, sir.
What in God's name was counsel thinking when he batted wisdom for Bush? I left. I was at the game. That was it. I left. I've seen the end of this novel before. I was a big, big fan when they hired counsel. 5 months in, he doesn't know his ball club any better than this.
No, that's lefty righty though. Patrick Wisdom has 2 pinch hit homers in the last 10 days, both against left handers. That's the best matchup he's got available. On his bench, one of the best matchups on the ball club. Any chance he can get to put Wisdom up there, he will do so. But you're bummed about it because Bush had already homered and Bush has been doing well, right?
Exactly. Jesus, he's homering, he's doing well. But yeah, we're going to pinch hit for him? Come on.
Well, it's the slave to the matchups. It's a slave to the matchups. And not just the handedness. Maybe it's that particular kind of lefty and that particular kind of righty. Amen. Council and Jed together are going to go by the book and the spreadsheet a lot, because that will prove over the long haul to be the right choice. And that's what it is. Council does have a gut, obviously, and he goes with it sometimes. But more often than not, you will see that kind of decision to go to the matchup. I hear you. Michael Bush has looked very, very good. But he doesn't get to hit a lefty if Patrick Wisdom is on the bench. Specifically that kind of lefty. Frank is in MacArthur Park and is now on 670 The Score. Frank, did anybody leave a cake out in the rain? How are you, sir?
No, I'm in Melrose Park, actually. But
I see.
Anyway,
yeah.
Listen, you know what? I've been a Sox fan since 1956. I don't have to belabor the fact this is the worst team I ever laid eyes on. But you know what? There's no defending Grifol either. They picked this guy who had about 9 managerial opportunities, not opportunities, but interviews. Nobody wanted them. We get a guy off the I never even heard of the guy, another Kansas City reject. The bottom line is this. Everybody could beat theirs. I feel sorry for Stoney and the announcers trying to make something happen. But here, I'll give you a good example. The other night, what got me pissed off about Grifol was this. Give the Sox fans something to cheer about, anything, a little piece of a cookie. That kid goes 7 strong innings to a 9-pitch 7th inning. He's got 90 pitches cannon. Why wouldn't you let this kid come out and finish that game? Why wouldn't you do it? Why does this guy have to do what he does every pitch? You know, as far as Crochet goes, sit him the rest of the year. I don't want to see this guy go out and pitch 3 innings a game. I don't want to look at him again. Throw him to the book. But here's the bottom line to everything.
Yeah.
Until Jerry Reinsdorf, who's a scumbag in my eyes, I've been a season ticket holder since the 40s, my family, sells this team is going nowhere. Because that article by Morrissey the other day, which I don't agree with him all the time, with a bozo face on Reinsdorf, hit it right on the head. He don't care about the Sox fans. This guy bought 2 franchises 40 years ago, spent about $45 million total, now they're worth about $7 billion between them. What does he care about us? He's a cocky, no-good individual, and he's ruined 2 franchises. And I'm going to tell you something, with his six championships.
Yeah.
If he did, if Houston and Portland didn't make a mistake in the 84 draft, they would have never won a world championship, the Bulls. So you know what?
What?
I am not giving them another dime of my money, ever, until this guy either drops dead or sells the team. I thank you for listening to me. I want to hear your reaction.
Thank you, Frank. Oh, my God. That was exquisite. That was, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to 670 The Score. My reaction is that Frank is why the Lord invented phone callers. Right there.
Bend over and I'll show you.
Print it. Cut that. Print. Cut. Print. Post. Phenomenal. I have a million reactions, but none of them matter as much as every word that Frank just said. Callers, hang on. We're going to get to you. In fact, we'll do it next. I'm holding team of the moment. Callers, we'll come back to you. That's right, I'm delaying it. It's 670 The Score. It's Hit and Run.
The premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
What does he care about us? He's a cocky, no-good individual, and he's ruined two franchises. And I'm going to tell you something with his six championships.
Yeah.
If Houston and Portland didn't make a mistake in the 84 draft, they would have never won a world championship, the Bulls. So you know what?
What?
I am not giving them another dime of my money, ever, until this guy either drops dead or sells the team. I thank you for listening to me. I want to hear your reaction.
Thank you, Frank. Inject Frank into all of our veins. It's Matt Spiegel here with you on 670 The Score. The sadism of the White Sox season continues. David is in Princeton on The Score. Hello, David.
I'll have to call. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is Wayne.
Oh, hello, Wayne. How are you?
Matt, yes. I know you cover baseball, but I want your honest opinion.
Hey, Wayne, turn off the radio, man. Got to turn the radio down, sir.
Okay, I'll turn it down.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Who's responsible for this mess? La Russa's been with him about 4 years now. Chris Getz has been with him that time or longer. Who actually is responsible for this mess? Is it Jerry and I bet...
Yes, it's Jerry Reinsdorf. It's absolutely Jerry Reinsdorf. He did a lot of great things as a baseball owner. He built a lot of amazing, he built a really good and healthy thing with loyalty and with love and with passion. And he wanted to do it with a certain amount of financial efficiency, and that is his choice as the owner of the gold. But these last 10 years or more, it has descended into a vanity project. He gave Rick Hahn a chance to do a rebuild, but didn't let him go all the way. And the rehiring of Tony La Russa and now the handing over of the organization to the shadow president, Tony La Russa, is indicative of, sadly, a man who's working a vanity project with very little of the former wisdom that he brought to the baseball portion of this. He brought in his old friend to try and make good on something he felt guilty about, which is allowing Hawk Harrelson to fire him in the 80s. You know, there've been a lot of attempts to personalize this in an unfortunate way in recent years. And the thing is, a lot of those attempts to personalize it really worked very well for several decades. The same stuff that makes you laugh sometimes makes you cry. The loyalty that was a strength has turned into a serious, serious weakness. Yes, it's on Jerry. And then it has been a lazy process in terms of hiring the right people. It has too often been, well, this guy's around, this guy's right here. I mean, allowing Chris Getz to do this without interviewing anybody from the outside, what are you doing? I don't know, is he just waiting to sell? Waiting to pass, and then his heirs will sell? Yes, it's on Jerry. It absolutely is. This is Mark in San Diego on The Score. Hello, Mark. You're on Hit and Run. Good morning.
Good morning, Matt. I enjoy your show, man. Thank you so much for being on here. Helping me out when I'm living out of state. Quick question for you. So when you watch the games, you see the batters hit the ball on just a line, and it's right to a player because of the way the defense adjusts to the batter. Why aren't these batters adjusting their alignment in the box?
Well,
to adjust their trajectory of the ball, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I think it's just, it's so damn hard, man. It's just, we talk about hitting like it's easy, and it's just not. And sometimes we talk about hitting like it's hard and with nuance, but we still assume there can be some level of expertise, and there can be sometimes. I'm guilty of it. I thought it was a really interesting back and forth with Dustin Kelly that we played at the top of the hour. You know, people like Bruce and myself and others in the dugout saying, why don't people have more two-strike approaches? And he's like, they do, but they just, it's hard. It's hard. Can you teach it? Well, that's hard. Is it about willingness to do it? Well, it's just hard. It's really freaking hard. And some guys can't do it. And then some guys don't get asked to do it. I mean, adjusting in the box and adjusting their alignment based on the pitcher, they don't know what's coming, man. They're sitting dead red fastball because if they don't, they have no chance against major league velocity. And then they're trying to slow their bat down and slow their process down to catch, to hit off speed. Or they're trying to shut it down completely for a pitch that's outside of the strike zone. Nico said that. He just kind of dropped that in his post game after he had the walk-off walk like 10 days ago. He said, yeah, I was able to shut it down. He's going up there ready to swing on every single pitch and then trying to shut it down if it's not a strike. That's how hard it is. I mean, making decisions in that split second, crazy, man. It's not like you're up there looking at a golf tee at this point. Callers, we will continue to get you in at 312-644-6767. We still got to get to Team of the Moment, damn it. We still got to get to my Eric Davis reference from 1987, and you'll understand why. And we still got to get to Eno Saris from The Athletic. We'll get to all of that and you next hour, final hour on Hit and Run on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.